And yet, as the foot pedals turned, they seemed to generate an unseen source of power, so that the boy could pedal very slowly and yet move along the street quite swiftly. As he reached each entrance, he thrust one hand into a bag he wore slung over his shoulder, pulled out a roll of papers, and tossed it into the entrance. It might have been Dennis, or Sandy, or any one of hundreds of boys with a newspaper route in any one of hundreds of towns back home. And yet, as with the children playing ball and jumping rope, there was something wrong about it. The rhythm of the gesture never varied. The paper flew in identically the same arc at each doorway, landed in identically the same spot. It was impossible for anybody to throw with such consistent perfection. Calvin whistled. I wonder if they play baseball here. As the boy saw them, he slowed down on his machine and stopped. His hand arrested as it was about to plunge into the paper bag. What are you kids doing out on the street? He demanded. Only root boys are allowed out now, you know that. No, we don't know it, Charles Wallace said. We're strangers here. How about telling us something about this place? You mean you've had your entrance papers processed and everything? The boy asked. You must have if you're here, he answered himself. And what are you doing here if you don't know about us?
You tell me, Charles Wallace said.
Are you examiners? The boy asked a little anxiously. Everybody knows our city has the best central intelligence center on the planet. Our production levels are the highest. Our factories never close. Our machines never stop rolling. Added to this, we have 5 poets, 1 musician, 3 artists, and 6 sculptors, all perfectly channeled.
What are you quoting from? Charles Wallace asked.
The manual, of course, the boy said. We are the most oriented city on the planet. There has been no trouble of any kind for centuries. All Kamazats knows our record. This is why we are the capital city of Kamazats. That is why central intelligence is located here. That is why it makes its home here.
There was something about the way he said it that made a shiver run up and down Meg's spine. But Charles Wallace asked briskly,
Where is this central intelligence center of yours?
Central, the boy corrected. Just keep going and you can't miss it. You are strangers, aren't you? What are you doing here?
Are you supposed to ask questions? Charles Wallace demanded severely.
The boy went white, just as the woman had.
I humbly beg your pardon. I must continue my route now, or I will have to talk my timing into the explainer.
And he shot off down the street on his machine. Charles Wallace stared after him.
What is it? He asked Meg and Calvin. There was something funny about the way he talked, as though he weren't really doing the talking. Know what I mean?
Calvin nodded thoughtfully.
Funny is right. Funny, peculiar, not only the way he talked either. The whole thing smells.
Come on, Meg pulled at them. How many times was it she had urged them on? Let's go find Father. He'll be able to explain it all to us.
They walked on. After several more blocks, they began to see other people. Grown-up people, not children, walking up and down and across the streets. These people ignored the children entirely, seeming to be completely intent on their own business. Some of them went into the apartment buildings. Most of them were heading in the same direction as the children. As these people came to the main street from the side streets, they would swing around the corners with an odd, automatic stride, as though they were so deep in their own problems, and the route was so familiar that they didn't have to pay any attention to where they were going. After a while, the apartment buildings gave way to what must have been office buildings, great, stern structures with enormous entrances. Men and women with briefcases poured in and out. Charles Wallace went up to one of the women, saying politely,
Excuse me, but could you please tell me?
But she hardly glanced at him as she continued on her way.
Look!
Meg pointed. Ahead of them, across a square, was the largest building they had ever seen, higher than the Empire State Building and almost as long as it was high.
"This must be it," Charles Wallace said. "Their central intelligence or whatever it is. Let's go on."
"But if Father's in some kind of trouble with this planet," Meg objected, "isn't that exactly where we shouldn't go?"
"Well, how do you propose finding him?" Charles Wallace demanded.
"I certainly wouldn't ask there."
"I didn't say anything about asking, but we aren't going to have the faintest idea where or how to begin to look for him until we find out something more about this place, and I have a hunch that that's the place to start. If you have a better idea, Meg, why, of course, just say so."
"Oh, get down off your high horse," Meg said crossly. "Let's go to your old central intelligence and get it over with."
"I think we ought to have passports or something," Calvin suggested. "This is much more than leaving America to go to Europe. And that boy and the woman both seem to care so much about having things in proper order. We certainly haven't got any papers in proper order."
"If we needed passports or papers, Mrs. Watsit would have told us so," Charles Wallace said. Calvin put his hands on his hips and looked down at Charles Wallace.
"Now look here, old sport. I love those three old girls just as much as you do, but I'm not sure they know everything."
"They know a lot more than we do."
"Granted. But you know Mrs. Watsit talked about having been a star. I wouldn't think that being a star would give her much practice in knowing about people. When she tried to be a person, she came pretty close to goofing it up. There was never anybody on land or sea like Mrs. Watsit the way she got herself up."
"She was just having fun," Charles said. "If she'd wanted to look like you or Meg, I'm sure she could have."
Calvin shook his head. "I'm not so sure. And these people seem to be people, if you know what I mean. They aren't like us, I grant you that. There's something very offbeat about them. But they're lots more like ordinary people than the ones on Uriel."
"Do you suppose they're robots?" Meg suggested. Charles Wallace shook his head.
"No, that boy who dropped the ball wasn't any robot, and I don't think the rest of them are either. Let me listen for a minute."
They stood very still, side by side, in the shadow of one of the big office buildings. Six large doors kept swinging, open, shut, as people went in and out, looking straight ahead, paying no attention to the children whatsoever. Charles wore his listening, probing look.
"They're not robots," he said suddenly and definitely. "I'm not sure what they are, but they're not robots. I can feel minds there. I can't get at them at all, but I can feel them sort of pulsing. Let me try a minute more."
The three of them stood there very quietly. The doors kept opening and shutting, and the stiff people hurried in and out, walking jerkily like figures in an old silent movie. Then, abruptly, the stream of movement thinned. There were only a few people, and these moved more rapidly, as if the film had been speeded up. One white-faced man in a dark suit looked directly at the children, said, "Oh dear, I shall be late," and flickered into the building.
"He's like the White Rabbit," Meg giggled nervously. "I'm scared," Charles said. "I can't reach them at all. I'm completely shut out."
"We have to find Father," Meg started again.
"Meg,"
Charles Wallace's eyes were wide and frightened.
"I'm not sure I'll even know Father. It's been so long, and I was only a baby."
Meg's reassurance came quickly.
"You'll know him, of course you'll know him. The way you'd know me, even without looking, because I'm always there for you. You can always reach in."
"Yes." Charles punched one small fist into an open palm with a gesture of great decision. Let's go to Central Intelligence.
Calvin reached out and caught both Charles and Meg by the arm.
You remember when we met, you asked me why I was there, and I told you it was because I had a compulsion, a feeling I just had to come to that particular place at that particular moment?
Yes, sure.
I've got another feeling. Not the same kind. A different one. A feeling that if we go into that building, we're going into terrible danger.
Chapter 7. The Man with Red Eyes.
We knew we were going to be in danger, Charles Wallace said. Mrs. Watson told us that.
Yes, and she told us that it was going to be worse for you than for Meg and me, and that you must be careful. You stay right here with Meg, old sport, and let me go in and case the joint and then report to you.
No, Charles Wallace said firmly. She told us to stay together. She told us not to go off by ourselves.
She told you not to go off by yourself. I'm the oldest, and I should go in first.
No, Meg's voice was flat. Charles is right, Cal. We have to stay together. Suppose you didn't come out and we had to go in after you. Come on. But let's hold hands if you don't mind.
Holding hands, they crossed the square. The huge Central Intelligence building had only one door, but it was an enormous one, at least 2 stories high and wider than a room, made of a dull bronze-like material.
Do we just knock? Meg giggled.
Calvin studied the door.
There isn't any handle or knob or latch or anything. Maybe there's another way to get in.
Let's try knocking anyhow, Charles said.
He raised his hand, but before he touched the door, it slid up from the top and to each side, splitting into 3 sections that had been completely invisible a moment before. The startled children looked into a great entrance hall of dull, greeny marble. Marble benches lined 3 of the walls. People were sitting there like statues. The green of the marble reflecting on their faces made them look bilious. They turned their heads as the door opened, saw the children, looked away again.
Come on,
Charles said, and still holding hands, they stepped in. As they crossed the threshold, the door shut silently behind them. Meg looked at Calvin and Charles, and they, like the waiting people, were a sickly green. The children went up to a blank 4th wall. It seemed unsubstantial, as though one might almost be able to walk through it. Charles put out his hand.
It's solid and icy cold.
Calvin touched it too.
Ugh!
Meg's left hand was held by Charles, her right by Calvin, and she had no desire to let go either of them to touch the wall.
Let's ask somebody something.
Charles led them over to one of the benches.
Could you tell us what's the procedure around here?
He asked one of the men. The men all wore nondescript business suits, and though their features were as different one from the other as the features of men on Earth, there was also a sameness to them. Like the sameness of people riding a subway, Meg thought. Only on a subway, every once in a while there's somebody different, and here there isn't. The man looked at the children warily.
The procedure for what?
How do we see whoever's in authority? Charles asked.
You present your papers to the A machine. You ought to know that, the man said severely.
Where is the A machine? Calvin asked.
The man pointed to the blank wall.
But there isn't a door or anything, Calvin said. How do we get in?
You put your S papers in the B slot, the man said. Why are you asking me these stupid questions? Do you think I don't know the answers? You'd better not play any games around here, or you'll have to go through the process machine again, and you don't want to do that.
We're strangers here, Calvin said. That's why we don't know about things. Please tell us, sir, who you are and what you do.
I run a number one spelling machine on the second grade level.
But what are you doing here now? Charles Wallace asked.
I'm here to report that one of my letters is jamming, and until it can be properly oiled by an F-grade oiler, there is danger of jammed mines.
Strawberry jam or raspberry? Charles Wallace murmured.
Calvin looked down at Charles and shook his head warningly. Meg gave the little boy's hand a slight, understanding pressure. Charles Wallace, she was quite sure, was not trying to be rude or funny. It was his way of whistling in the dark.
The man looked at Charles sharply. I think I shall have to report you. I'm fond of children due to the nature of my work, and I don't like to get them in trouble. But rather than run the risk myself of reprocessing, I must report you.
Maybe that's a good idea, Charles said. Who do you report us to?
To whom do I report you?
Well, to whom, then? I'm not on the second grade level yet. I wish he wouldn't act so sure of himself, Meg thought, looking anxiously at Charles and holding his hand more and more tightly until he wriggled his fingers in protest. That's what Mrs. Watsit said he had to watch, being proud. Don't, please don't, she thought hard at Charles Wallace. She wondered if Calvin realized that a lot of the arrogance was bravado. The man stood up, moving jerkily as though he had been sitting for a long time.
I hope he isn't too hard on you, he murmured as he led the children toward the empty fourth wall. But I've been reprocessed once, and that was more than enough. And I don't want to get sent to it. I've never been sent to it, and I can't risk having that happen.
There was it again. What was this it?
The man took from his pocket a folder filled with papers of every color. He shuffled through them carefully, finally withdrawing one.
I've had several reports to make lately. I shall have to ask for requisition for more A21 cards.
He took the card and put it against the wall. It slid through the marble, as though it were being sucked in and disappeared.
You may be detained for a few days, the man said, but I'm sure they won't be too hard on you because of your youth. Just relax and don't fight, and it will all be much easier for you.
He went back to his seat, leaving the children standing and staring at the blank wall. And suddenly, the wall was no longer there, and they were looking into an enormous room lined with machines. They were not unlike the great computing machines Meg had seen in her science books, and she knew her father sometimes worked with. Some did not seem to be in use. In others, lights were flickering on and off. In one machine, a long tape was being eaten. In another, a series of dot dashes were being punched. Several white-robed attendants were moving about, tending the machines. If they saw the children, they gave no sign. Calvin muttered something.
What? Meg asked him.
There's nothing to fear except fear itself, Calvin said. I'm quoting, like Mrs. Who. Meg, I'm scared stiff.
So am I.
Meg held his hand more tightly.
Come on.
They stepped into the room with the machines. In spite of the enormous width of the room, it was even longer than it was wide. Perspective made the long rows of machines seem almost to meet. The children walked down the center of the room, keeping as far from the machines as possible.
Though I don't suppose they're radioactive or anything, Charles Wallace said, or that they're going to reach out and grab us and chew us up.
After they had walked for what seemed like miles, they could see that the enormous room did have an end, and that at the end there was something. Charles Wallace said suddenly, and his voice held panic,
Don't let go of my hands! Hold me tight! He's trying to get at me!
Who?
Meg squeaked.
I don't know, but he's trying to get in at me. I can feel him.
Let's go back,
Calvin started to pull away.
No,
Charles Wallace said.
I have to go on. We have to make decisions, and we can't make them if they're based on fear.
His voice sounded old and strange and remote. Meg, clasping his small hand tightly, could feel it sweating in hers. As they approached the end of the room, their steps slowed. Before them was a platform. On the platform was a chair, and on the chair was a man. What was there about him that seemed to contain all the coldness and darkness they had felt as they plunged through the black thing on their way to this planet? "I have been waiting for you, my dears," the man said. His voice was kind and gentle, not at all the cold and frightening voice Meg had expected. It took her a moment to realize that though the voice came from the man, he had not opened his mouth or moved his lips at all, that no real words had been spoken to fall upon her ears, that he had somehow communicated directly into their brains. "But how does it happen that there are three of you?" the man asked. Charles Wallace spoke with harsh boldness, but May could feel him trembling.
"Oh, Calvin just came along for the ride."
"Oh, he did he?" For a moment there was a sharpness to the voice that spoke inside their minds. Then it relaxed and became soothing again. "I hope that it has been a pleasant one so far."
"Very educational," Charles Wallace said.
"Let Calvin speak for himself," the man ordered.
Calvin growled, his lips tight, his body rigid.
"I have nothing to say."
Meg stared at the man in horrified fascination. His eyes were bright and had a reddish glow. Above his head was a light, and it glowed in the same manner as the eyes, pulsing, throbbing in steady rhythm. Charles Wallace shut his eyes tightly.
"Close your eyes," he said to Meg and Calvin. "Don't look at the light. Don't look at his eyes. He'll hypnotize you."
"Clever, aren't you? Focusing your eyes would, of course, help," the soothing voice went on. "But there are other ways, my little man. Oh, yes, there are other ways."
"If you try it on me, I shall kick you,"
Charles Wallace said. It was the first time Meg had ever heard Charles Wallace suggesting violence.
"Oh, will you indeed, my little man?"
The thought was tolerant, amused. But four men in dark smocks appeared and flanked the children.
"Now, my dears," the words continued, "I shall, of course, have no need of recourse to violence. But I thought perhaps it would save you pain if I showed you at once that it would do you no good to try to oppose me. You see, what you will soon realize is that there is no need to fight me. Not only is there no need, but you will not have the slightest desire to do so. For why should you wish to fight someone who is here only to save you pain and trouble? For you, as well as for the rest of all the happy, useful people on this planet, I, in my own strength, am willing to assume all the pain, all the responsibility, all the burdens of thought and decision."
"We will make our own decisions, thank you,"
Charles Wallace said.
"But of course, and our decisions will be one, yours and mine. Don't you see how much better, how much easier for you that is? Let me show you. Let us say the multiplication table together."
"No,"
Charles Wallace said.
"Once one is one, once two is two, once three is three."
"Mary had a little lamb," Charles Wallace shouted. "Its fleece was white as snow."
"Once four is four, once five is five, once six is six."
"And everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go."
"Once seven is seven, once eight is eight, once nine is nine."
Peter, pumpkin eater, had a wife and couldn't keep her."
"Once 10 is 10, once 11 is 11, once 12 is 12.
The number words pounded insistently against Meg's brain. They seemed to be boring their way into her skull. 2 × 1 = 2. 2 × 2 = 4. 2 × 3 = 6. Calvin's voice came out in an angry shout.
67 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
2 × 4 = 8. 2 × 5 = 10. 2 × 6 = 12.
Father! Meg screamed. Father!
The scream, half involuntary, jerked her mind back out of darkness. The words of the multiplication table seemed to break up into laughter.
Splendid, splendid. You have passed your preliminary tests with flying colors.
You didn't think we were as easy as all that, falling for that old stuff, did you?
Charles Wallace demanded.
Ah, I hoped not. I most sincerely hoped not. But after all, you are very young and very impressionable, and the younger the better, my little man, the younger the better.
Meg looked up at the fiery eyes, at the light pulsing above them, and then away. She tried looking at the mouth, at the thin, almost colorless lips, and this was more possible, even though she had to look obliquely, so that she was not sure exactly what the face really looked like, whether it was young or old, cruel or kind, human or alien.
If you please, she said, trying to sound calm and brave.
The only reason we are here is because we think our father is here. Can you tell us where to find him?
Ah, your father.
There seemed to be a great chortling of delight.
Ah, yes, your father. It is not can I, you know, young lady, but will I.
Will you, then?
That depends on a number of things. Why do you want your father?
Didn't you ever have a father yourself? Meg demanded. You don't want him for a reason. You want him because he's your father.
Ah, but he hasn't been acting very like a father lately, has he? Abandoning his wife and his 4 little children to go gallivanting off on wild adventures of his own?
He was working for the government. He'd never have left us otherwise, and we want to see him, please, right now.
My, but the little miss is impatient. Patience, patience, young lady.
Meg did not tell the man on the chair that patience was not one of her virtues.
And by the way, my children, he continued blandly, you don't need to vocalize verbally with me, you know. I can understand you quite as well as you can understand me.
Charles Wallace put his hands on his hips defiantly.
The spoken word is one of the triumphs of man, he proclaimed, and I intend to continue using it, particularly with people I don't trust.
But his voice was shaking. Charles Wallace, who even as an infant had seldom cried, was near tears.
And you don't trust me?
What reason have you given us to trust you?
What cause have I given you for distrust?
The thin lips curled slightly. Suddenly, Charles Wallace darted forward and hit the man as hard as he could, which was fairly hard, as he had had a good deal of coaching from the twins.
Charles! Meg screamed.
The men in dark smocks moved smoothly but with swiftness to Charles. The man in the chair casually raised one finger, and the men dropped back.
Hold it,
Calvin whispered, and together he and Meg darted forward and grabbed Charles Wallace, pulling him back from the platform. The man gave a wince, and the thought of his voice was a little breathless, as though Charles Wallace's punch had succeeded in winding him.
May I ask why you did that?
Because you aren't you, Charles Wallace said. I'm not sure what you are, but you...
He pointed to the man on the chair.
Aren't what's talking to us. I'm sorry if I hurt you. I didn't think you were real. I thought perhaps you were a robot, because I don't feel anything coming directly from you. I'm not sure where it's coming from, but it's coming through you. It isn't you.
Pretty smart, aren't you?
The thought asked, and Meg had an uncomfortable feeling that she detected a snarl.
It's not that I'm smart, Charles Wallace said, and again Meg could feel the palm of his hand sweating inside hers.
Try to find out who I am, then, the thought probed.
I have been trying,
Charles Wallace said, his voice high and troubled.
Look into my eyes. Look deep within them, and I will tell you.
Charles Wallace looked quickly at Meg and Calvin, then said, as though to himself,
I have to,
and focused his clear blue eyes on the red ones of the man in the chair. Meg looked not at the man, but at her brother. After a moment, it seemed that his eyes were no longer focusing. The pupils grew smaller and smaller, as though he were looking into an intensely bright light, until they seemed to close entirely, until his eyes were nothing but an opaque blue. He slipped his hands out of Meg's and Calvin's and started walking slowly toward the man on the chair.
No! Meg screamed. No!
But Charles Wallace continued his slow walk forward, and she knew that he had not heard her.
No!
She screamed again and ran after him. With her inefficient flying tackle, she landed on him. She was so much larger than he that he fell sprawling, hitting his head a sharp crack against the marble floor. She knelt by him, sobbing. After a moment of lying there, as though he had been knocked out by the blow, he opened his eyes, shook his head, and sat up. Slowly, the pupils of his eyes dilated until they were back to normal, and the blood came back to his white cheeks. The man on the chair spoke directly into Meg's mind, and now there was a distinct menace to the words.
I am not pleased, he said to her. I could very easily lose patience with you, and that, for your information, young lady, would not be good for your father. If you have the slightest desire to see your father again, you had better cooperate.
Meg reacted as she sometimes reacted to Mr. Jenkins at school. She scowled down at the ground in sullen fury.
It might help if you gave us something to eat, she complained. We're all starved. If you're going to be horrible to us, you might as well give us full stomachs first.
Again, the thoughts coming at her broke into laughter.
Isn't she the funny girl, though? It's lucky for you that you amuse me, my dear, or I shouldn't be so easy on you. The boys I find not nearly so diverting. Ah, well. Now, tell me, young lady, if I feed you, will you stop interfering with me?
No,
Meg said.
Starvation does work wonders, of course,
the man told her.
I hate to use such primitive methods on you, but of course you realize that you force them on me.
I wouldn't eat your old food anyhow.
Meg was still all churned up and angry as though she were in Mr. Jenkins's office.
I wouldn't trust it.
Of course, our food, being synthetic, is not superior to your messes of beans and bacon and so forth. But I assure you that it's far more nourishing, and though it has no taste of its own, a slight conditioning is all that is necessary to give you the illusion that you are eating a roast turkey dinner.
If I ate now, I'd throw up anyhow, Meg said.
Still holding Meg's and Calvin's hands, Charles Wallace stepped forward.
Okay, what next?
He asked the man on the chair.
We've had enough of these preliminaries. Let's get on with it.
That's exactly what we were doing, the man said. Until your sister interfered by practically giving you a brain concussion. Shall we try again?
No, Meg cried. No, Charles, please. Let me do it, or Calvin.
But it is only the little boy whose neurological system is complex enough. If you tried to conduct the necessary neurons, your brains would explode.
And Charles's wouldn't?
I think not.
But there's a possibility?
There's always a possibility.
Then he mustn't do it.
I think you will have to grant him the right to make his own decisions.
But Meg, with a dogged tenacity that had so often caused her trouble, continued,
You mean Calvin and I can't know who you really are?
Oh, no, I didn't say that. You can't know it in the same way. Nor is it as important to me to have you know. Ah, here we are.
From somewhere in the shadows appeared four more men in dark smocks carrying a table. It was covered with a white cloth, like the tables used by room service in hotels, and held a metal hot box containing something that smelled delicious, something that smelled like a turkey dinner.
There's something phony in the whole setup, Meg thought. There is definitely something rotten in the state of Kamazots. Again, the thought seemed to break into laughter.
Of course it doesn't really smell. But isn't it as good as though it really did?
I don't smell anything, Charles Wallace said.
I know, young man, and think how much you're missing. This will all taste to you as though you were eating sand, but I suggest that you force it down. I would rather not have your decisions come from the weakness of an empty stomach.
The table was set up in front of them, and the dark, smocked men heaped their plates with turkey and dressing, and mashed potatoes and gravy, and little green peas with big yellow blobs of butter melting in them, and cranberries and sweet potatoes topped with gooey brown marshmallows, and olives and celery and rosebud radishes and... Meg felt her stomach rumbling loudly. The saliva came to her mouth.
Oh, jiminy, Calvin mumbled.
Chairs appeared, and the four men who had provided the feast slid back into the shadows. Charles Wallace freed his hands from Meg and Calvin and plunked himself down on one of the chairs.
Come on, he said. If it's poisoned, it's poisoned, but I don't think it is.
Calvin sat down. Meg continued to stand indecisively. Calvin took a bite. He chewed. He swallowed. He looked at Meg.
If this isn't real, it's the best imitation you'll ever get.
Charles Wallace took a bite, made a face, and spit out his mouthful.
It's unfair,
he shouted at the man. Laughter again.
Go on, little fellow. Eat.
Meg sighed and sat.
I don't think we should eat this stuff, but if you're going to, I'd better too.
She took a mouthful.
It tastes all right. Try some of mine, Charles.
She held out a forkful of turkey. Charles Wallace took it, made another face, but managed to swallow.
Still tastes like sand, he said.
He looked at the man.
Why?
You know perfectly well why. You shut your mind entirely to me. The other two can't. I can get in through the chinks. Not all the way in, but enough to give them a turkey dinner. You see, I'm really just a kind, jolly old gentleman.
Ha!
Charles Wallace said. The man lifted his lips into a smile, and the smile was the most horrible thing Meg had ever seen.
Why don't you trust me, Charles? Why don't you trust me enough to come in and find out what I am? I am peace and utter rest. I am freedom from all responsibility. To come in to me is the last difficult decision you need ever make.
If I come in, can I get out again? Charles Wallace asked.
But of course, if you want to. But I don't think you will want to.
If I come, not to stay, you understand, just to find out about you, will you tell us where Father is?
Yes, that is a promise, and I don't make promises lightly.
Can I speak to Meg and Calvin alone without your listening in?
No. Charles shrugged.
Listen, he said to Meg and Calvin, I have to find out what he really is. You know that. I'm going to try to hold back. I'm going to try to keep part of myself out. You mustn't stop me this time, Meg. But you won't be able to, Charles. He's stronger than you are. You know that. I have to try. But Mrs. Whatsit warned you. I have to try. For Father, Meg, please, I want to know my father.
For a moment, his lips trembled. Then he was back in control.
But it isn't only Father, Meg, you know that now. It's the black thing. We have to do what Mrs. Witch sent us to do. Calvin,
Meg begged. But Calvin shook his head.
He's right, Meg, and we'll be with him no matter what happens.
But what's going to happen? Meg cried.
Charles Wallace looked up at the man.
Okay, he said. Let's go.
Now the red eyes and the light above seemed to bore into Charles, and again the pupils of the little boy's eyes contracted. When the final point of black was lost in blue, he turned away from the red eyes, looked at Meg, and smiled sweetly. But the smile was not Charles Wallace's smile.
Come on, Meg. Eat this delicious food that has been prepared for us, he said.
Meg snatched Charles Wallace's plate and threw it on the floor so that the dinner splashed about and the plate broke into fragments.
No, she cried, her voice rising shrilly. No, no, no!
From the shadows came one of the dark, smocked men and put another plate in front of Charles Wallace, and he began to eat eagerly.
What's wrong, Meg? Charles Wallace asked. Why are you being so belligerent and uncooperative?
The voice was Charles Wallace's voice, and yet it was different, too, somehow flattened out, almost as a voice might have sounded on the two-dimensional planet.
Meg grabbed wildly at Calvin, shrieking, That isn't Charles! Charles is gone!
Chapter 8 The Transparent Column. Charles Wallace sat there tucking away turkey and dressing as though it were the most delicious thing he had ever tasted. He was dressed like Charles Wallace. He looked like Charles Wallace. He had the same sandy brown hair, the same face that had not yet lost its baby roundness. Only the eyes were different, for the black was still swallowed up in blue. But it was far more than this that made Meg feel that Charles Wallace was gone, that the little boy in his place was only a copy of Charles Wallace, only a doll. She fought down a sob.
Where is he?
She demanded of the man with red eyes.
What have you done with him? Where is Charles Wallace?
But my dear child, you are hysterical, the man thought at her. He is right there before you, well and happy, completely well and happy, for the first time in his life. And he is finishing his dinner, which you also would be wise to do.
You know it isn't Charles, Meg shouted. You've got him somehow.
Hush, Meg, there's no use trying to talk to him.
Calvin said, speaking in a low voice into her ear.
What we have to do is hold Charles Wallace tight. He's there, somewhere, underneath. And we mustn't let them take him away from us. Help me hold him, Meg. Don't lose control of yourself. Not now. You've got to help me hold Charles.
He took the little boy firmly by one arm. Fighting down her hysteria, Meg took Charles's other arm and held it tightly.
You're hurting me, Meg,
Charles said sharply.
Let me go.
No, Meg said grimly.
We've been all wrong.
Charles Wallace's voice, Meg thought, might have been a recording. There was a canned quality to it.
He isn't an enemy at all. He's our friend.
Nuts, Calvin said rudely.
You don't understand, Calvin, Charles Wallace said. Mrs. Watsit, Mrs. Who, and Mrs. Witch have confused us. They're the ones who are really our enemies. We never should have trusted them for a minute.
He spoke in his calmest, most reasonable voice, the voice which infuriated the twins. He seemed to be looking directly at Calvin as he spoke, and yet Meg was sure that the bland blue eyes could not see, and that someone, something else, was looking at Calvin through Charles. Now the cold, strange eyes turned to her.
Meg, let go. I will explain it all to you, but you must let go.
No,
Meg gritted her teeth. She did not release her grasp, and Charles Wallace began to pull away with a power that was not his own, and her own spindly strength was no match against it.
Calvin!
She gasped as Charles Wallace wrenched his arm from her and stood up. Calvin, the athlete. Calvin, the boy who split firewood and brought it in for his mother, whose muscles were strong and controlled, let go Charles Wallace's wrist and tackled him as though he were a football. Meg, in her panic and rage, darted at the man on the chair, intending to hit him as Charles Wallace had done. But the black-smocked men were too quick for her, and one of them held her with her arms pinioned behind her back.
Calvin, I advise you to let me go, came Charles Wallace's voice from under Calvin.
Calvin, his face screwed up with grim determination, did not relax his hold. The man with red eyes nodded, and three of the men moved in on Calvin. At least it took three of them, pried him loose, and held him as Meg was being held.
Mrs. Watsit!
Meg called despairingly.
Oh, Mrs. Watsit!
But Mrs. Watsit did not come.
Meg, Charles Wallace said. Meg, just listen to me.
Okay, I'm listening.
We've been all wrong, I told you. We haven't understood. We've been fighting our friend and father's friend.
If father tells me he's our friend, maybe I'll believe it. Maybe. Unless he's got father under a spell or whatever it is, like you.
This isn't a fairy tale. Spells indeed, Charles Wallace said. Meg, you've got to stop fighting and relax. Relax and be happy. Oh, Meg, if you'd just relax, you'd realize that all our troubles are over. You don't understand what a wonderful place we've come to. You see, on this planet, everything is in perfect order because everybody has learned to relax, to give in, to submit. All you have to do is look quietly and steadily into the eyes of our good friend here, for he is our friend, dear sister, and he will take you in as he has taken me.
Taken you in is right, Meg said. You know you're not you. You know you've never in your life called me dear sister.
Shut up a minute, Meg,
Calvin whispered to her. He looked up at the man with red eyes.
Okay, have your henchmen let us go and stop talking to us through Charles. We know it's you talking, or whatever's talking through you. Anyhow, we know you have Charles hypnotized.
A most primitive way of putting it,
the man with red eyes murmured. He gestured slightly with one finger, and Meg and Calvin were released.
Thanks,
Calvin said wryly.
Now, if you are our friend, will you tell us who or what you are?
It is not necessary for you to know who I am. I am the Prime Coordinator. That is all you need to know.
But you're being spoken through, aren't you? Just like Charles Wallace. Are you hypnotized too?
I told you that was too primitive a word without the correct connotations.
Is it you who are going to take us to Mr. Murray?
No. It is not necessary, nor is it possible for me to leave here. Charles Wallace will conduct you.
Charles Wallace?
Yes.
When?
Now.
The man with red eyes made the frightening grimace that passed for his smile.
Yes. I think it might as well be now.
Charles Wallace gave a slight jerk of his head, saying, "Come," and started to walk in a strange, gliding, mechanical manner. Calvin followed him. Meg hesitated, looking from the man with red eyes to Charles and Calvin. She wanted to reach out and grab Calvin's hand, but it seemed that ever since they had begun their journeyings, she had been looking for a hand to hold, so she stuffed her fists into her pockets and walked along behind the two boys.
"I've got to be brave," she said to herself. "I will be."
They moved down a long, white, and seemingly endless corridor. Charles Wallace continued the jerky rhythm of his walk and did not once look back to see if they were with him. Suddenly, Meg broke into a run and caught up with Calvin.
"Cal," she said, "listen, quick. Remember Mrs. Wutsett said your gift was communication, and that was what she was giving you? We've been trying to fight Charles physically, and that isn't any good. Can't you try to communicate with him? Can't you try to get into him?"
"Golly, Day, you're right!"
Calvin's face lit up with hope, and his eyes, which had been somber, regained their usual sparkle.
"I've been in such a swivet. It may not do any good, but at least I can try."
They quickened their pace until they were level with Charles Wallace. Calvin reached out for his arm, but Charles flung it off.
"Leave me alone," he snarled. "I'm not gonna hurt you, old sport," Calvin said. "I'm just trying to be friendly. Let's make it up, huh?"
"You mean you're coming around?" Charles Wallace asked.
"Sure," Calvin's voice was coaxing. "We're reasonable people, after all. Just look at me for a minute, Charlebus."
Charles Wallace stopped and turned slowly to look at Calvin with his cold, vacant eyes. Calvin looked back, and Meg could feel the intensity of his concentration. An enormous shudder shook Charles Wallace. For a brief flash, his eyes seemed to see. Then, his whole body twirled wildly and went rigid. He started his marionette's walk again.
"I should have known better," he said. "If you want to see Murray, you'd better come with me and not try any more hanky-panky."
"Is that what you call your father, Murray?" Calvin asked.
Meg could see that he was angry and upset at his near success.
"Father? What is a father?" Charles Wallace intoned. "Merely another misconception. If you feel the need of a father, then I would suggest that you turn to it."
It again.
"Who's this it?"
Meg asked.
"All in good time," Charles Wallace said. "You're not ready for it yet. First of all, I will tell you something about this beautiful, enlightened planet of Kamazots."
His voice took on the dry, pedantic tones of Mr. Jenkins.
"Perhaps you do not realize that on Kamazots, we have conquered all illness, all deformity."
"We?"
Calvin interrupted. Charles continued as though he had not heard. And of course he hadn't, Meg thought.
"We let no one suffer. It is so much kinder simply to annihilate anyone who is ill. Nobody has weeks and weeks of runny noses and sore throats. Rather than endure such discomfort, they are simply put to sleep."
"You mean they're put to sleep while they have a cold, or that they're murdered?"
Calvin demanded.
"Murder is a most primitive word," Charles Wallace said. "There is no such thing as murder on Kamazots. It takes care of all such things?
He moved jerkily to the wall of the corridor, stood still for a moment, then raised his hand. The wall flickered, quivered, grew transparent. Charles Wallace walked through it, beckoned to Meg and Calvin, and they followed. They were in a small square room from which radiated a dull, sulfurous light. There was something ominous to Meg in the very compactness of the room, as though the walls, the ceiling, the floor might move together and crush anybody rash enough to enter.
"How did you do that?" Calvin asked Charles.
"Do what?"
"Make the wall open like that."
"I merely rearranged the atoms," Charles Wallace said loftily. "You've studied atoms in school, haven't you?"
"Sure, but..."
"Then you know enough to know that matter isn't solid, don't you? That you, Calvin, consist mostly of empty space? That if all the matter in you came together, you'd be the size of the head of a pin? That's plain scientific fact, isn't it?"
"Yes, but..."
"So I simply pushed the atoms aside, and we walked through the space between them."
Meg's stomach seemed to drop, and she realized that the square box in which they stood must be an elevator, and that they had started to move upward with great speed. The yellow light lit up their faces, and the pale blue of Charles's eyes absorbed the yellow and turned green. Calvin licked his lips.
"Where are we going?"
"Up," Charles continued his lecture. "On Kamazats, we are all happy because we are all alike. Differences create problems. You know that, don't you, dear sister?"
"No,"
Meg said.
"Oh, yes, you do. You've seen at home how true it is. You know that's the reason you're not happy at school, because you're different."
"I'm different and I'm happy," Calvin said.
"But you pretend that you aren't different."
"I'm different and I like being different."
Calvin's voice was unnaturally loud.
"Maybe I don't like being different," Meg said. "But I don't want to be like everybody else either."
Charles Wallace raised his hand and the motion of the square box ceased, and one of the walls seemed to disappear. Charles stepped out, Meg and Calvin following him. Calvin just barely making it before the wall came into being again, and they could no longer see where the opening had been.
"You wanted Calvin to get left behind, didn't you?"
Meg said.
"I am merely trying to teach you to stay on your toes, I warn you. If I have any more trouble from either of you, I shall have to take you to it."
As the word "it" fell from Charles's lips, again, Meg felt as though she had been touched by something slimy and horrible.
"So what is this it?"
she asked.
"You might call it the boss."
Then Charles Wallace giggled, a giggle that was the most sinister sound Meg had ever heard.
"It sometimes calls itself the happiest sadist."
Meg spoke coldly to cover her fear.
"I don't know what you're talking about."
"That's S-A-D-I-S-T, not S-A-D-D-E-S-T, you know,"
Charles Wallace said and giggled again.
"Lots of people don't pronounce it correctly."
"Well, I don't care," Meg said defiantly. "I don't ever want to see it, and that's that."
Charles Wallace's strange, monotonous voice ground against her ears.
"Meg, you're supposed to have some mind. Why do you think we have wars at home? Why do you think people get confused and unhappy? Because they all live their own separate individual lives. I've been trying to explain to you in the simplest possible way that on Kamazats, individuals have been done away with. Kamazats is one mind. It's it. And that's why everybody's so happy and efficient. That's what old witches like Mrs. Watsit don't want to have happen at home.
She's not a witch,
Meg interrupted.
No?
No,